China desires to conquer Taiwan, but will it invade after witnessing the retaliation of the West towards Russia? This is Brief Before Impact. Hey, welcome everyone. Thank you for joining us for this episode. Today, we're going to be discussing how China has viewed the invasion of Ukraine and what it means for its future hopes for Taiwan. You've heard me talk about this issue briefly on most recent podcast episodes, but I want to dive in tonight on this more strategic threat that is discussed on the importance of Taiwan to the world and the United States' relationship with it both economically and militarily. And now that China has had weeks to view and observe the world's retaliation towards Russia's invasion of Ukraine, we can get a better sense of what their plans and intentions will be for their desire to conquer Taiwan. But before we jump into it, we'll take a quick ad break, then we'll get started. Hey, welcome back, everyone. The way we're going to go through today's brief is simple by addressing a few things, starting with the initial reaction by China of the invasion of Russian forces into Ukraine. Second, we're going to highlight some of the more economic assets that China has been buying up since the invasion started and will most likely continue to. And lastly, will China ever invade Taiwan? What will be the circumstances that will allow them the best probability and the highest probability of success in such a campaign? And we'll close out with our courses of action. But let's get into the initial Chinese reaction to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. According to Rebecca Keel for military.com, Beijing appears unnerved by both the strength of the world's condemnation of Moscow and the Russian military struggles in the first 2 weeks of the war. But it's unclear whether that's enough to prevent Chinese President Xi Jinping from using force to accomplish his number one priority of reunifying China and Taiwan. According to the Admiral John Aquilino, he's the head of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, telling the Senate Armed Services Committee that, quote, we continue to watch to try to identify. He has learned that the correct lessons as it applies to the changing world order and the concern that we see in the Ukraine. Intelligence officials suggested that Beijing might even be more hesitant to act now. The CIA director, William Burns, told the House Intelligence Committee, quote, they've been surprised, talking about China, they've been surprised and unsettled to some extent by what they've seen in Ukraine over the last few days. Everything in the strength of the Western reaction to the way in which Ukrainians have fiercely resisted to the relatively poor performance of Russia. Now, still, Burns said that I would not underestimate President Xi and Chinese leadership's determination with regard to Taiwan. Now, one factor that could be contributing to China's unease in the wake of Russia's attack on Ukraine is Beijing's own intelligence failures. This is, again, Burns telling senators in a briefing. Chinese leadership, President Xi in particular, is unsettled by what he's seen, partly because his own intelligence doesn't appear to have told him what was going to happen. You know, weeks before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Putin and Xi signed a pact that declared there were no limits or forbidden areas of cooperation between Russia and China. Now, while Burns does not expect major changes in Chinese-Russia relations post-Ukraine invasion, he does think that Beijing is concerned about the reputational damage that China suffers by association with the ugliness of Russia's aggression. And this highlights a tremendous point, especially with Chinese Belt Road Initiative, which you've heard me do episode in the past. A big part of Chinese ambitions to connect the world, essentially, through an economic road that would connect its markets, or I should say its manufacturing ability, with the markets in, you know, Europe, for example. A big part of that is growing its image abroad as a global power, a responsible global power. And the fact that China has embraced Russia might now give it a darker image whenever it's trying to construct that narrative that it is, in fact, a global leader in the international community. So this can be a challenge for China moving forward, as they might have to shape the narrative more to their benefit though still maintaining that relationship with Russia, being frankly one of the few allies that Russia has. So with the economic ambitions that China has longstanding had, how have they engaged with Russia since the invasion? And Western economic sanctions have just been devastating, to say the least, on the Russian economy. According to the Russian finance minister, Anton Silonov, quote, "I think that our partnership with China will still allow us to maintain the cooperation that we have achieved, and not only maintain, but also increase it in an environment where Western markets are closing." Now, this highlights the fact that Russia essentially its dependence on China is ever so much increasing every day, and the longer this military conflict continues in Ukraine. Russia knows that, China knows that, and essentially, to interject my view, I think we'll see Russia almost become the petrostate, the Belarus almost of China. In a little context, Belarus, another Eastern European country, greatly depends on Russia between its relationship and its security and economic security as well. Russia essentially will become that for China, and China will treat it much like that, as having to prop up the Russian state. Now, according to CNBC, if China decided to pull a full swap line with Russia, you know, accepting rubles as payment for anything it needed to buy, including crucial imports like technology parts and semiconductors that Moscow has been cut off from in its latest rounds of sanctions, China could essentially plug most of the holes fired into Russia's economy by the West. To what extent China's leadership steps in to support Moscow, it'll play a key role in the future of Russia's economy. Now, China is Russia's top export market after the European Union. Trade between China and Russia reached a record high of about $147 billion in 2021, which was up almost 36% year on year. And that's according to China's customs agency. Russian exports to China were worth $79 billion in 2021. Oil and gas, that accounted for 56% of that trade. Now, China's imports from Russia exceeded exports by more than $10 billion last year. China can still trade with Russian firms in rubles and in Chinese yuan through the Russian banks that haven't yet been sanctioned. But despite many years of working to increase bilateral trade in their own currencies, the vast majority of that trade, including about 88% of Russian exports, is still invoiced in dollars and euros. Not only that, but China could essentially be catching a falling knife by taking on the credit and sanctions risk of Russia's rapidly deteriorating economy. Maximin Hess, a Central Asia fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, he said China could alleviate the vast majority of the pain, but if they offered those swap lines and everything, effectively they'd be taking on all those liabilities and risk of the Russian economy, bringing those onto their own balance sheet at a time when the Russian economy is at its weakest in decades. Now, according to Rushir Sharma, writing for the Financial Times, offering a bit of a different insight of the kind of the depth of partnership between China and Russia, from the mainstream media narrative, I think it'd be easy to conclude that China and Russia are strong allies and there's very little between them that they can't accomplish together. That's what it would appear. But when you dig a little deeper, according to Sharma, after building for months, financial stress emanating from the Chinese property sector has blown out to unprecedented levels in recent weeks, destabilizing an already brittle economy and making it less likely that Beijing will aggressively support Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Before I continue, remember, it's never a simple black and white when it's in geopolitics. There are always multiple things and multiple levers that have to be pulled and pushed on. And the state of China's economy is certainly going to play into the role of how much they're willing to defend Russia. Continuing on with Sharma's writing, total debt in China has tripled over the last three decades to nearly 300% of GDP. China's working age population started to contract in 2015, so fewer workers means slower growth. You know, strong economic growth is virtually unheard of when the working population working age population is shrinking, so which makes it highly unlikely Beijing can hit its growth target of close to 6%, particularly when productivity is declining. You know, the government is posing aggressive new regulations on high productivity sectors such as tech and taking draconian steps to control the pandemic. Beijing's campaign to limit COVID-19 cases to zero shielded much of the population from infection, but also left them vulnerable to new variants. Now these variants are surging, triggering new lockdowns under the zero COVID policy, and economic activity, including factory output and retail sales, looks set to contract this month and next. So the West faces a more vulnerable and possibly less unified Eastern Front in the new Cold War that many global observers have accounted for. With an economy just one-tenth the size of China's, Russia is in a state of financial peril without equal, largely cut off from the rest of the world. But to an extent that is widely underappreciated, China faces perils too and risks great damage to its vulnerable economy if it does anything that cancels foreign capital. That means Beijing is likely to think twice before offering generous support to Russia or defying Western sanctions against the war. And from my research, this is completely in line with what we've seen so far, though China has walked a very delicate diplomatic line, not overtly condemning Russia's invasion, but also not condemning it, not condemning it in a way that points the blame towards Putin or the Russian military or government in any direct way, but rather playing a very direct role of saying, we hope that this conflict in Ukraine is able to come to a reasonable conclusion along these lines, and maintaining simultaneously the idea that this is an internal matter, just like the China-Taiwan issue is an internal matter. Always, again, playing into that narrative, creating the environment that people will be willing to endure if China were to ever invade Taiwan. Which brings us to kind of the last point for the episode today is, will China ever invade Taiwan now that they've had weeks of watching this invasion unfold in Ukraine? Mike O'Sullivan is a senior contributor for Forbes magazine. He writes that broadly, China has noticed, or may have noticed, several things. First, the rapid cohesion of European foreign policy, the increasing singularity with which European foreign policy has reformed, and the emerging power of Eastern European countries like Poland, and not to mention the foreign policy tigers in the Baltic states like Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia. The immediate concrete implication for all of this is that the extension of China's Belt Road Initiative into Europe and its 16-in-1 partnership with Eastern European countries, it's all but dead. Chinese investment into Europe will also face greater scrutiny. Now, also, the Chinese reading of America is more complicated. American intelligence and diplomacy, in the view of O'Sullivan, has performed well. And much of the latter, the diplomatic approach, has been sufficiently discreet. America has notably paid more attention to the Chinese reaction than Europe has. So whether China realizes it or not, its international stance on the invasion can see it move from a strategic competitor to the U.S. to an outright adversary. A profound breakdown in relations with the U.S. would damage the international economy and international institutions severely. So there's much at stake. Now, geopolitics apart, O'Sullivan continues, there is also much China can observe on how this war is waged. In recent years, the Chinese military and Navy has undertaken several large-scale exercises with Russia, and the Chinese military is organized in a similar way to the Russians. Now, given that the Chinese have effectively no battle experience, they must surely wonder if they have been right training, if they had the right training partner, granted the poor performance of the Russian army. For example, there was multiple war games concluded by the U.S. Marine Corps University that suggested Russians would have wrapped up the invasion in Ukraine within 72 hours. Clearly, that conclusion was wrong, and China has been partnering with Russia to grow their military capability. Again, O'Sullivan continues, the area where China has the greatest scope to learn is in the information wars, where President Zelensky and Ukraine have excelled. Globalization has spread social media, which still retains its Western cultural bias internationally. I can think of a very few Chinese media or social media outlets that have penetrated beyond China in terms of creating engaging, trusted content. In short, this means that there's an increasing contested world. China will struggle to tell its story. So in that respect, O'Sullivan suspects that China feels much less sure of its position on Ukraine and Russia and will most likely continue to watch and wait, hopefully suing for peace. And I've said this before in previous episodes, that the greatest benefit or outcome in this invasion for China could be that the war just continues and it maintains the status quo, because that would essentially keep Western powers locked in on the ongoings of Eastern Europe, not so much Southeast Asia. That being said, the NATO and West has certainly galvanized its position towards this invasion of Russia. And I think that, and this is a great pivot point into our courses of action, what we could predict, what would happen in the near to short term regarding China and its desires to take over Taiwan. So in my assessment, though China desires to conquer Taiwan, based on their lack of military capability and the acknowledgement of Western retaliation to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, China will most likely hold off launching a military assault onto Taiwan until conditions meet a higher probability of success. Those conditions do not currently exist. In my assessment for the most dangerous course of action, though the West and NATO has rallied together against Russian aggression, the most dangerous course of action would be for the U.S. to fail in creating multiple strategies that deter the most likely scenarios that would allow China to invade Taiwan. The U.S. needs to be clear and vocal on its intentions to deter China from invading Taiwan and not allow Xi Jinping to make a similar miscalculation that Putin has made. Thanks for joining me tonight. I appreciate y'all listening to these episodes. And it's, in short to say, the geopolitics ongoing in 2022, post-COVID, has been a fascinating space to just make some observations on. And I don't think there's any guarantees of what can or will happen with any of these global powers that I discuss on the show. That being said, I hope some of these takeaway points can leave some data in your mind of what is possible and what is likely and certainly what's most dangerous. I hope you are picking up what I'm putting down. I am Matt Parker. This is Brief Before Impact.